This Janet Meffer Today podcast is sponsored by Preborn. We want to save 300 babies' lives by giving their moms free ultrasounds, and you can help. Your gift of $140 will give free ultrasounds to five young women. Please help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or go to preborn.com.
This is Janet Meffer Today.
Our confidence is in Christ alone.
Are we going to stand with God, come what may?
If the Word of God says it, I believe it.
And that's the way it is.
And now, here is Janet Meffer.
Thanks so much for being with us again. Well, how important are printed books to our freedom? You might never have considered that question before, but there is a trend of late in which school libraries are literally throwing away books and replacing them with digitally based books and content. Now, some people may say, what's wrong with that? Nothing, but there is more to consider than you might think. So we're going to explore that right now with my guest, Tom DeWeese, who is president of the American Policy Center, and his latest book is called Erase. Today, we'll be talking to Tom about some of his thoughts on the great piece he has on this subject at AmericanPolicy.org. It is called Barbarians at the School Door. Also, I want to touch on the subject of these human rights cities and counties that we're seeing cropping up across the country. So, Tom, great to welcome you back. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, so tell us what's been happening in New York City and elsewhere. This was news to me, some of this, and I'm really glad you're talking about it.
Yeah, this came out in a newspaper article. There's a school there called Life Sciences Secondary School, and they decided that books are antiquated, they're expensive, they wear out, the kids lose them, so let's dump all the books, and we'll just start using iPads and e-books and Kindles and all that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And they talk about how they're opening up the great internet highway of information so they can open the minds of the children and on and on and on. There's a school up in Massachusetts that took their 20,000 books out of their library, dumped them, and they created kind of a quasi-internet little boutique kind of thing, you know, instead, where the kids can watch three flat screen TVs, or they can sit and talk and so forth, and this is replacing the library.
Wow.
And you think, yeah, okay, we've got the internet, there's all this information there, books are expensive and so forth, but there's a real problem here, and the problem is that we know the education system really isn't about academics anymore. It is about behavior modification. It's about changing the attitudes, values, and beliefs of the children. And how better to do that than to get rid of printed books? Printed books can't be changed. They're always the same unless you burn them.
Yes.
But you start putting things on e-books and iPads and that sort of thing, really, they can be edited, they can be censored, they can be eliminated by the touch of a button. And so we don't need book burning anymore. That's just too nasty. We just press a button and we can erase an entire culture if we want to.
Yeah.
And this is the real alarm that I'm worried about here. And you know, in a library, it used to be it was a rule, had to be quiet.
Yep.
So people were studying. They were gaining information. They were researching. Well, these now are just jibber-jabber sessions, and nobody's learning anything. And that's a great alarming thing, I think.
Oh, yeah. You're hitting a huge nerve with me. I'm a huge book person. I'm a huge library person. It drives me nuts to go into libraries these days. I would be that, you know, old battle-axe stereotype librarian walking around going, shh, shh, shh. I'm trying to read. I'm trying to think. Yeah. Now, this is interesting because people might say, well, what evidence, though, is there that we know of that this is part of the motivation, that in order to be able to control the flow of information, then they would have the ability to change the information that you receive?
Well, we've already found, if you go on Facebook, you'll see people complaining all the time that their posts have been eliminated or censored.
Right.
And sometimes you go to do a Google search, it won't take you into certain websites and that sort of thing. They have that power to control it. And, you know, when you're looking at the education system, when people think that I'm being radical when I say that it's not about academics anymore, but if you look at several of the programs, there's one program called Transition, that is in the schools today. Where it contains no academic significance whatsoever. The kids are role-playing. They're kind of strip-searching the kids for their ideas, their attitudes, whatever. Yeah. Now there's a major program that's being pushed out of the Department of Education this year called the Whole Child Approach, and something called Social Emotional Learning.
What's
SEL.
That?
This is a major program coming out of the Department of Education today. It has absolutely nothing to do with academics. It's all about attitudes, values, and beliefs. And what they're trying to do, they've set a goal that we're going to have a certain kind of society. We go back to the whole globalism thing, the Agenda 21 thing, all that.
Yeah.
We have to change in order to achieve that. We have to change the attitudes, values, and beliefs of people to believe a certain way.
Right.
And we've begun to see certain books, like Huck Finn by Mark Twain, has been changed. They have edited all of the N-words out of it, which were a lot in it. It was about slavery and so forth. It was part of the story.
Right.
Some of the story there on Jim, the slave who's in the story, has been changed. Very slowly, very subtly, they began to change these books. The other thing is that if there are books with attitudes that they don't like, that don't fit, may not be published into Kindle books and so forth.
True.
It's a real concern.
Yeah. What was the name of the Department of Education Whole Child Learning program here? What is it called again?
Social Emotional Learning. And this came about in 2011, a group called the Association for Supervision and Curriculum Development. You have all these private, non-governmental organizations that feed off of these grant programs. And they come in and create all this, but they are taking control of the curriculum. And it's becoming literally propaganda. And, you know, to talk about, go in with a different idea.
Yeah.
That doesn't fit that, and you won't be allowed in there. You'll be thrown out. And this is what we're finding with these books, throwing these books out. There were some teachers who were really, really upset about this, and they actually went down to the pile of books sitting in the hallway and grabbed some of them out, gave them to some of the kids. But the school said that the books were too expensive, so we needed to go this other way. But interestingly enough, after all this, they went out and they bought several hundred Common Core algebra books.
That's different.
Yeah, that's different. Yeah.
That, you know, and that part in the article where you described the fact that these were books headed for the trash bin, I'm thinking to myself, if money is your concern, you know, you can sell those at used bookstores. Why in the world would you just throw them out? And that, I think that says something right there.
I think it does. It's about getting rid of knowledge. And, you know, one of the things in my book, Erase, I talked about a program called Globally Acceptable Truth. And a lot of people thought I made that up for the fiction of the book. I didn't. It actually came from an organization out of the UN called the Eden Foundation. They advocate globally acceptable truth as a means. They say the reason we have wars and strife and poverty is because there's too much knowledge. And it's hard for the average person to, you know, bring all that in and make decisions about their life. So we're going to have globally acceptable truth, so you know this is what you can believe, and your answers to all your questions are taken care of for you. You think that's fiction? It actually exists.
Good grief. I mean, that's amazing. So in other words, we should be hoarding our books. Keep your printed books close to the vest. Don't let anybody burn them or take them away.
Yes. You may find someday that a house out in the woods somewhere that people haven't seen in many, many, many years has a library in it, and people will walk in and go, look at this.
Yeah.
What are these?
Yeah, that's amazing. Do you believe this claim that printed books could ever be antiquated and just kind of fall out of common use because of this kind of trend?
Well, you know, it depends on what you're calling antiquated. If you're talking about the founding of this nation and why it was founded and who the founding fathers were, versus there are a bunch of old slave owners that just wanted to control everybody, if that's the new message, then the old message is antiquated. But it doesn't, you know, history is history. Facts are facts.
Right.
And so this is what they're calling antiquated. No, I don't think they get antiquated. You don't find Romeo and Juliet getting antiquated. You don't find, you know, algebra and math, 1 and 1 plus, you know, is 2. But we are changing the mask programs to where they say, well, maybe now one and one aren't two. How did you get to your answer? What do you think?
That's crazy. We're going to go to a very quick break. We'll be back with Tom DeWeese from the American Policy Center right after this.
Here is today's Capitol Hill Brief with Concerned Women for America President Penny Nance.
Here are some of the topics I deal with in my book, Feisty and Feminine, A Rallying Cry for Conservative Women. The devaluation of women, sexual assault in politics, marriage intolerance, abortion and the sanctity of human life, the real war against women, the rise of Islamic extremism, and why Israel matters. Now, more than ever, there is a need for thoughtful, compelling conservative women to boldly affirm the conservative principles of our biblical worldview. We all need to equip ourselves with the language necessary to pierce the hearts and minds of our contemporaries and our young women. Feisty and Feminine is designed to help you do just that. I hope you take the time to read it.
Penny Nance's latest book, Feisty and Feminine, empowers Christian women to engage the culture, and it's our gift to thank you for your donation today. Request yours at CapitolHillBrief.org. That's CapitolHillBrief.org. Janet Meffer today and Preborn are partnering to save 300 babies' lives this summer.
Well, my name is Dan Steiner, and I'm the president of Preborn. Ultrasound truly is a game changer. When a mom comes into a pregnancy center under pressure to abort her child, perhaps the dad's gone, perhaps her mother is pressuring her. Most of the time in her heart, she doesn't want to abort, but what she needs is something that will give her the strength to choose life against the pressures that are forcing her to consider abortion. That's the ultrasound. If she hears her baby's heartbeat and sees that baby on ultrasound, everything's different. 80% of the time, she'll choose life.
Will you join us in saving babies' lives? A $140 sponsorship gives five babies a chance at life, and you'll get a picture of the babies' lives that were saved. All gifts are tax deductible. To donate, call now 855-601-BABY or 855-601-2229 or give securely at preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Back on Janet Meffer today. With me today, Tom DeWeese, president of the American Policy Center. You can check them out at AmericanPolicy.org. He's got a great piece out, Barbarians at the School Door, in which we're seeing now more and more of these traditional libraries getting rid of these physical books and really wanting to move more to digitally based books or content. The problem with that, though, is where we see all of these people who are not so much into education and learning as much as they are into indoctrination and controlling the flow of information. What does that bode for the future? Tom, one of the things, you're so much an expert really in the realm of Agenda 21 and the UN and so forth. Where do you see Agenda 21 fitting into things like this and some of the other UN, the way they're thinking on the global level about where information should be regulated or at least controlled? There's been a lot of discussion about who controls the net and whether or not there should be net neutrality. How do you see things like the internet and, you know, the global struggle to be able to control what people read and don't read affecting us as Americans?
Well, first of all, Agenda 21 was announced as a comprehensive blueprint for the reorganization of human society. And they say over and over and over again, we've got to change the way people think. Of course, they use the scare tactics of environmental Armageddon. Right. And when we created the United States, the United States was different than any other nation on Earth. This was the one nation where the Constitution, the whole purpose of our government was to protect God-given rights you're born with, and that was government's job, and government was to be kept at bay and be limited. Everywhere else, practically in the world, the governments dictate to you what your rights are.
Yeah.
And now, how do you change the world? And with the United States having this different attitude, well, you do things to try to harmonize the United States into the rest of the world, and one of them was the threat of environmental Armageddon. And so you say, well, it didn't matter what rights you think you have. You if you don't have an earth to stand on, then what good does it do you?
Yeah.
And so they use that kind of scare tactics, and Americans began to change. And the Department of Education began to bring these ideas into the schools, and we now have a couple of generations of kids who have been through that who have no concept of why this nation was founded, our economic system, our history. And that has changed drastically the outlook of this nation, and these programs are being put in place without question.
Wow. Well, we have to question it. And this kind of segues into another issue that I wanted to discuss with you, because this is becoming an interesting development here where I am in the state of Texas, where Dallas County just proclaimed itself the first human rights county in Texas. And I guess this is all about embracing the United Nations Universal Declaration of Human Rights. This, as I understand it, is kind of a growing thing. It's been around maybe a few years. What can you tell us about this human rights cities thing and human rights counties? What is going on here?
Well, of course, their argument of human rights, it makes it sound like equality. And what's wrong with that?
Yeah.
Just, everybody will be equal. We'll all have our own, everything is protected for that. It's not true. What this really is social justice. It is social engineering. It is redistribution of wealth. And what they talk about in these human rights cities is they're embracing the 2030 agenda, which is the new reboot of Agenda 21, that we'll all live together with these things. Well, if you look at the 2030 agenda, was 17 goals were announced in it. All they did was take Agenda 21 and extrapolate it out into more detail. It's all it really was.
Yeah.
But they talk about ending hunger and achieving food security is goal number two, and improve nutrition, and it'll all be more healthy this way. What they're really talking about is controlling food supplies, controlling what you eat. Goal number three is ensure healthy lives. And really, how do you do that? What they determine is a healthy life is you don't eat any meat, first of all, so we get rid of the entire cattle industry. And, it's control. That's what it's about. And all these radical ideas that you see popping up today, the whole Black Lives Matter thing is all based on social justice. Atlanta just had spent $196,000 to have a walkway painted in the rainbow colors. $196,000 to do that. Now let's talk about equality here. What about the taxpayers that had to pay for that don't believe in that?
Right.
Is there equality there?
No.
This is about social engineering. It is about changing our society, the way we think, attitudes, values, and beliefs. It all goes together. Get rid of the books, get rid of the history, erase our past, and create this kind of stuff as the future.
Unbelievable. And the document in Dallas County, for example, I'm looking at the story from Breitbart about this. Part of the wording here is that they want to serve as a model for communities in the U.S. to witness practical ways the human rights framework can make every citizen a partner of sustainable change. Now, I would think the average person would read that and go, what does that even mean? What is that buzzword, sustainable change? Is that the same thing that goes along with what you were talking about in the 2030 agenda? It's just a matter of we're going to tell you what you're going to think and do.
Exactly. Sustainable development, which really came about in the through the UN and its Commission on Global Governance, is where it was first heard from, and it was prominent in Agenda 21. And this means total control of agriculture, of the environment. The environment is what we think about for every single decision that we make, and it just comes through that. It's just that. All-encompassing.
Yeah, it is. Now, my question is, here, as you were talking very, very well about the issue of us being a sovereign nation and how important it is for the United States to maintain its sovereignty as being utterly unique in the world, what about how this undermines our Constitution? How is it that an American county or an American city can say, I'm now on board with the UN? The UN doesn't have sovereignty over us. How is this allowed?
Well, it shouldn't be, and we're allowing it because they have succeeded in changing the thinking already, that globalism is the the whole center of all of this, that we're all in this together. How many times have you heard these guys say that? We're
constantly.
All in this together.
Constantly.
I'm not in anything with you.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, right. It's me too.
That's always my answer to it. This nation was founded, we talk about the ideals of freedom. There are three tenets of the ideals of freedom. There is free enterprise, individuality, and private property. And I challenge anybody who is having their community brought up this idea of these human rights cities, ask the question, where in here is it represented and protected free enterprise, individuality, and private property? My individuality, my ability to be who I am. You tell us that this is all human rights, that we're all going to be partners, and I don't want to be partners with it. I want to live my life the way I want to. Oh, that is selfish. That is racist. That is just, you know, why? Because it goes against their well-ordered society. One of the things that they do not ever want to allow here. I find it funny because in all these programs, they keep talking about innovation, innovative cities, and so forth. How can you get innovation when the education system and all these programs, if you had a Thomas Edison, a Henry Ford, or the Wright brothers show up, they would do everything they could to stamp them out of existence because those three people, the four of them, they destroyed what had been in place since the beginning. Yes. Alexander the Great and Thomas Jefferson lived in the same world. They traveled on the same horseback, and they lit their homes with the same candles. These guys came along and changed all that and destroyed that well-ordered society. So they don't ever want to have that happen again, so we make sure everybody thinks exactly the right way, don't know the history so they can ask questions, and everything just moves along with globally acceptable truth.
Yeah, and what's really interesting about this is that when you look at the Human Rights Council, what a joke. It's a haven for dictators, as Nikki Haley put it. It's got this, what, Saudi Arabia is still on there, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how is this about human rights? Why don't you start with your council members in talking about human rights?
Exactly. I mean, what do you mean by human rights? And, I am just amazed today that to watch, for example, the so-called women's movement. All through the 70s and on up, they told us that this was about equality for women. They talked about, all their rights and so forth. And the same exact movement has embraced Sharia law.
Oh, I know.
What part of insanity is this?
I know. I know. Well, and isn't it ironic, too, because you have states like Michigan that have just passed a ban against female mutilation. This should be a no-brainer for anybody in America to say, no, we shouldn't have little girls against their will being mutilated. And the progressives are fighting this. They don't want this. And they're saying, no, these people are working against what they always said was their baseline for activism. And it just doesn't make any sense.
Well, you know, if you want to make sense of it, understand that it never was about that.
That's it.
The entire women's movement, a whole bunch of other movements were created to destroy our society. And so they use those as excuses and radicalize us, and now they've really radicalized it.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, deconstruction is the goal, not building up. It's tearing down. And what's really scary about it, Tom, is what ends up replacing it if they ever do succeed in tearing down our national sovereignty and those important three pillars, as you mentioned, of the American way of life.
Yeah. If you begin to question everything, and as you go to city council meetings and school board meetings and other things like that, start asking that question. How does this protect my individuality, free enterprise, and my private property? How does it do that? You'll hear the room go silent, like, what?
Yeah, next.
Yeah.
Exactly. But, you know, this is why your work is so important and so good for all of us to understand what is going on out there and how it applies in the bigger context of the threats to our freedoms as Americans. I encourage you to check out AmericanPolicy.org and also Tom's new book, Erase. Great read. And Tom DeWeese, thank you so much for being with us again. It was great to have you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
All right. Take care. And we'll be back on Janet Mefford Today. This Janet Meffer Today podcast is sponsored by Preborn. We want to save 300 babies' lives by giving their moms free ultrasounds, and you can help. Your gift of $140 will give free ultrasounds to 5 young women. Please help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-2229, or go to preborn.com. Welcome back to Janet Meffer Today. Thank you, by the way, to each and every one of you who have been calling and helping us save unborn babies. Preborn babies is the way we refer to them through our great ministry partner, Preborn. This is such a wonderful way to save lives. You know, there are so many young women, especially, who are in crisis pregnancies, and they don't know what to do, and they end up at a crisis pregnancy center, and they go in there, and they're wondering whether or not to go through with their abortions. They're thinking it over. They're not really sure. And they walk into a pregnancy center, and all of a sudden, they say to them, "We're going to give you a free ultrasound. Would you like a free ultrasound?" They get the free ultrasound. 80% of the time, those women choose life. That's what this whole campaign that we're doing this summer is about, providing those free ultrasounds that will save the lives of preborn babies. You can help by calling 855-601-BABY. That's 855-601-BABY. It works out to 855-601-2229, or there is a banner to click saying "Your love saves a life" at my website, janetmefford.com. Now, we're trying to save 300 preborn babies this summer. We're about halfway there. We really need you to call. If you can give a gift of $140, you'll be providing 5 free ultrasounds to young women who need to choose life. But we would be thankful, of course, for any gift you're able to afford today to help save these precious little ones whom God loves so much. So if you feel led, pray about it. There's some money left in your budget and you can help out. We'd love to have your support. This is such a wonderful opportunity for us to save lives and also to get the gospel to these moms. So call 855-601-BABY, 855-601-2229, or you can click on "Your love saves a life." JanetMefford.com is my website. Thank you so much. All right, let's move on to some of the news of the day. I thought this was great. The Family Research Council all day yesterday was encouraging tweet storm after tweet storm, saying SPLC exposed. And SPLC obviously stands for the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is an organization that has put together some of the most horrible, horrible insults against some of the greatest Christian and pro-family groups across America. They used to be about exposing extremists like the Ku Klux Klan and people like that. And then they needed to continue, I guess. And so pretty soon it became anybody who disagreed with the progressive agenda was smeared as a hater. And we know where that led. In 2012, Floyd Lee Corkins, the homosexual activist and convicted domestic terrorist, went into the headquarters of the Family Research Council, shot the building manager on his way to potentially mass murdering the staff of the Family Research Council. Can you imagine if he had been successful? And then he admitted to the FBI that he had been inspired by the Southern Poverty Law Center's hate map, which shows people who go on the website exactly where these ministries are located. What was FRC's crime? Oh, they're anti-LGBT. Really? They're anti-LGBT. No, they're pro-marriage and they're pro-family. And this guy could have, God forbid, killed everybody there. Then we had what happened at the baseball practice not too long ago, where this crazy guy from Southern Illinois shows up at this baseball practice and tries to kill people. He shoots Congressman Steve Scalise, who's still having some problems. Pray for him. This is a horrible, violence-inspiring organization, and I love the Family Research Council and the other conservative groups who are standing up against the SPLC and saying enough is enough. Here's another recent example. ABC and NBC referred to an appearance of Attorney General Jeff Sessions at an Alliance Defending Freedom event recently. They put in their headlines that he was speaking to an anti-LGBT hate group. Now, where do you think they got that phrase? They got that phrase, of course, from the SPLC. And it's absolutely ridiculous. The FBI and other groups stopped working with the SPLC a few years back just because they're not accurate. It's a very, very slanted propaganda outfit that is all about left-wing hate against us. Now, Carrie Kupek from the Alliance Defending Freedom was on with Martha McCallum at Fox News recently, and I wanted to play some of her thoughts on this matter. She first describes what ADF, as we know, is all about. This is Cut 1.
Alliance Defending Freedom is the world's largest religious freedom legal advocacy organization, and we advocate for the rights of all people to freely and peacefully live, speak, and operate according to their faith without threat of government punishment. We've been at the Supreme Court many times, and we have won 7 cases in 7 years. We are a respected Supreme Court practice, and we represent people from all walks of life and backgrounds.
Do you hate people who are LGBT?
No, not at all. And it's insulting to even hear something like that, which is what was in that headline, which is why we were so upset. In fact, the people that we represent, especially with respect to the wedding industry, which is where this issue typically comes up, these clients all have a common denominator, and that's that they serve and love everyone who walks through their doors. They can't participate in all religious events that violate their faith, but I would hope that we would want that same freedom for everyone.
Yes, absolutely. I think that that's the way to go. And that's what is true. And it went on a little bit longer. Listen to cut two.
I haven't heard anything. And what really bothers me so much about the headline and the story is that it's unethical. This is not ethical reporting. This kind of reporting does not allow for the civil discourse the American people want to engage in on these issues. It doesn't allow for a fair conversation, because if ABC is going to team up with a well-known left-wing propaganda machine like Southern Poverty Law Center, an organization known to incite violence, who lost their way a very long time ago, I would really appreciate the opportunity to tell them a little bit more about our organization and all the kinds of work that we do, including campus free speech, academic freedom, and so much more like we just discussed.
Right. So basically, she hasn't heard anything from ABC, and I assume NBC, up to the minute, I don't know, but there hasn't been much of a movement on their part to correct those headlines. Isn't that shameful? And they wonder why the American people turn against the mainstream media, why we look upon them as not tellers of truth and objective fact and giving both sides of the story, but people who are absolutely in bed with the DNC, the progressive cause, and that's all they care about, not objective journalism. It's no wonder. This is what is so frustrating about it. And I go back to this story. This is actually back in 2014. This was the headline on the Daily Caller: FBI severs ties with liberal domestic terrorism inspiring Southern Poverty Law Center. A plus on the headline. The FBI removed links to the Southern Poverty Law Center from the Civil Rights Division's webpage, breaking ties with a group that inspired a would-be mass shooter with its hate map. The SPLC no longer identified on the FBI's hate crimes page as partners. And one of the things that an FBI spokesman said at the time was, upon review, the civil rights program only provides links to resources within the federal government. While we appreciate the tremendous support we receive from a variety of organizations, we have elected not to identify those groups on the civil rights page. But the Anti-Defamation League is furious, at least was back in 2014. The FBI reportedly did not inform the group they planned to cancel their affiliation. Yes, they also were kicked to the curb, and they said, "We were shocked and surprised and disappointed," on and on and on. But this went back to the Floyd Corkins incident, the potential mass murder that could have occurred at the Family Research Council, and it was an appropriate move. Absolutely. It's crazy. Now, I look at this statement here from a few days ago. This is directly from their website, the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is what they said about Attorney General Sessions speaking at Alliance Defending Freedom, a pro-family Christian legal organization that has defended so many people. They're defending, for example, Jack Phillips, the Colorado baker, whose case will be heard at the Supreme Court. Here's what SPLC said. This was regarding the speech given to Alliance Defending Freedom. And it wasn't released. The remarks weren't released. Can you blame them? They said, "How can we trust that the nation's top law enforcement officer will protect all Americans when he's willing to meet behind closed doors with a group that supports criminalizing homosexuality and marginalizing LGBT people around the world? The Alliance Defending Freedom has rightfully earned its designation as a hate group by demonizing LGBT people." Total lie. They support criminalizing homosexuality. No, they stand for the First Amendment. They stand for the rights of Christians and anybody else, for example, with a conviction that marriage is a man and a woman union, which it is, and you can't redefine it. And they defend people's rights to believe that and to practice their faith in the public square. And I know the left would like to shove us all back in our churches and have us shut up and pat us on the head, not even probably pat us on the head, but, you know, kick us on the way out. We're not going to have it. This is the United States of America. That's not how we roll. And I think this campaign that FRC did yesterday, A+. Way to go, guys. We're going to come back. Stay with us. Everyone loves liberty. Our rights come from God, not from government. So why are you letting other people tell you what's best for your health care? Exercise your freedom with Liberty HealthShare. Liberty HealthShare is a community of people who voluntarily share one another's medical costs. Liberty HealthShare is founded on the idea that most people truly want to help one another. Healthcare sharing allows members to do just that as a true community that supports one another in times of need. Liberty believes people should make decisions for themselves and their families. Members are able to take back the freedom to make their own decisions about their health care. Freedom from guilt or doubt about how your money is used. You have the freedom to direct your health care, not to be dictated to by bureaucrats. Stop letting others tell you what to do and join a community of like-minded people. Exercise your freedom. Join Liberty HealthShare and take back the control of your health care while helping those around you. Call us at 855-58-LIBERTY for more information or check us out online at libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
Do you want to experience a closer relationship with God today? Sometimes growing in intimacy with God can seem out of our reach or something you have to work hard to achieve. Well, the good news is God desires intimacy with you more than you could ever imagine. This is Jeannie Nigro with Unshaken. If you want to grow closer to God, you simply need to think what He thinks and feel what He feels about everything. And that includes other people. It's impossible to experience intimacy with God when you're putting others down, critical of them, or always looking for what's not right about them, because that's not how God sees them. God always desires to bless and restore others. See the people in your life as God sees them. Lift them up, see their potential, and you'll grow closer to Him as a result. For more on how to remain unshaken in a world that's all shook up, go to jeannienigro.com. That's JeannieNigro.com. That's JeannieNigro.com.
Welcome back to Janet Mefford Today. Something really bad happened a few days ago. Missouri Representative Vicki Hartzler, as you know, had put forth that amendment that would prevent taxpayers from having to fund sex change operations in the military. And thanks to 24 Republicans, it didn't get through. Yes, it's a GOP-controlled Congress. Didn't get through. But why should we pay for sex changes? Peter LaBarbera over at LifeSite News, where he writes, has been covering this story, and he joins us now. Peter, great to have you here. How are you?
Great, Janet. Thanks for having me on.
24 Republicans, and if only three of them had voted the other way, this would have been a done deal. What in the world is going on here?
Yeah, and I just saw one has switched his vote, Janet, and that's Math. Representative Math, Brian Math, has said it was a miscast vote. So it's 23 Republicans, so that makes two. And some of these guys are like people we've sort of counted on to be pro-family. Barbara Comstock in Virginia. Incredible names here. Daryl Issa voted against the amendment to this would basically defund these radical, they used to be called sex change surgery. You can't change your sex. Your sex is what you have. God gave it to you. So they're trying to become the opposite sex, and they're going through these awful surgeries, which are so horrible, we can't even describe them, and now we're being expected to pay for them as taxpayers.
Right. Do you have any indication, Peter, when you've been covering this story, why these Republicans went this way? The cynic in me tends to say, who's funding them? Was it Paul Singer, this big pro-gay GOP donor? Was there any connection whatsoever between maybe some of the people who are pressuring them, who are pro-LGBT inside the Republican Party, and they felt like they couldn't go against that because they didn't want to take the heat, or what?
Well, I can only speculate that that's obviously part of it. Singer has funded some of these candidates. I think Comstock has taken Singer money in Virginia. She's got Northern Virginia to deal with, which is going more and more left, especially after Obama. This is north of Washington, D.C., one of the richest areas in the country, as Rush Limbaugh always talks about, which shows you what's wrong with big government. But, and just the general pressure within the Republican Party to disavow the homosexual and transgender issue in the culture war? I think that's the big question. And the value of this vote is we have these guys on record now. You are telling me, even you libertarian Republicans, the ones who sort of don't do the social issues as much, you're telling me that taxpayers should be forced to pay for these grotesque operations to remove healthy breast tissue, male sex organs. You're telling me that the taxpayers should have to pay for this? Shame on you.
Right. Yeah. I mean, one of the things that Representative Hartzler had noted was the fact that this was going to be costing an exorbitant amount of money. Why, just from a fiscal perspective, would anybody say, oh, this is a fantastic idea. Let's let gender confused people into the military and then let's help them along in their confusion by allowing them to have surgeries and we'll foot the bill.
Well, let's back up, Janet. First of all, Hartzler's First Amendment, which he retracted, was to just end the transgender military experiment that was begun by Obama. Remember, this was announced by Obama's Defense Secretary, Ash Carter. There was no congressional debate. There was no congressional vote. This was just imposed. At least homosexuals in the military was voted on. But that was also pressured by Obama, of course. But there was no vote here. So her First Amendment was just to get rid of it. And it says a lot about the Republican Party that they couldn't just ditch this whole transgender radical experiment. And we had to fall back to a money vote on paying for these operations. And I think, you know, that is very interesting to me. What has happened to the Republican Party?
Yeah, that's the question. And might I say on the other side, how brave it was for this congresswoman to do what she did. She is virtually standing alone. I mean, she's got some support, but she's taking a lot of heat for having taken the stand she has. I just support her and salute her to the hilt.
Absolutely. Unbelievable. But notice there's been lots of commentary on this. It's very popular what she did, and that shows the Republicans stop listening to the media, stop listening to the libertarians who hate social issues, and start doing what the platform says. Defend your own platform, which is very strong on LGBT issues.
Yeah, it's just awful to see. Talk a little bit, Peter, if you would, about what exactly this is from a taxpayer's perspective, what we're actually funding.
I have seen young women in their 20s showing off their flat chest. These are women. We associate mastectomies with cancer, with awful diseases that we're saving women from dying from. And what this movement is proposing is that women have their healthy breasts removed so that they can have flat chests like men. That, to me, screams mental illness. Doesn't it to you, Janet?
Of course it does. And it's been confirmed by medical experts for years. This is not something that's unknown to us.
Right. And so what we're talking about, again, is taxpayers paying for this. And what that means is, first of all, the Army under Obama, most people aren't aware of this, has already launched this radical education program where they're giving these transgender lectures where they're telling people, oh, the Army recognizes that a soldier can go from being a male to a woman. He changes his genetic marker, and then the Army wants to be part of that. And then, of course, what flows from that is, well, the person wants, can choose to have the sex reassignment surgery, that's one of the politically correct words for it. The soldier can choose to do that or not. Now, that's another thing, Janet. These regs call for women to accept men who think they're women being in female showers. Yeah. Some of these men have had the operation, some haven't. So you could have a man with artificial breasts, yet possessing his male genitalia, being in the shower with real women.
Yeah.
That is violating the rights of women. It's violating their conscience rights. It's violating their privacy rights. It should not be part of the military. And yet, thanks to Obama and Mad Dog Mattis, who I'm sort of calling GLBT Lapdog Mattis, because, I mean, he's going along with this agenda. He had the opportunity. He was asked by the Army and the Navy to postpone this whole transgender stuff for 2 years. Instead, he said, we'll postpone it 6 months until we can see how to implement it and associate the readiness factor. He should have just booted it for 2 years. I don't understand why he's being so deferential to the homosexual and transgender lobby.
Well, and when you look back at Barack Obama's original order here, couldn't Donald Trump conceivably do something about this via executive action? I'm not a big fan of executive action and wanton executive action, but it seems here maybe there is something he could do. Unfortunately, from what I'm hearing, and maybe you're hearing this from conservative notable leaders out there, he's not so much into it. He doesn't seem to want to get involved in this issue.
Yeah, but I think there's at some level there's also they're wishing that he doesn't do something to it. I mean, there's a whole side of the Republican Party that wants him to be bad on LGBT issues because they see that as a loser issue. And yet look at the reaction to Vicky Hartzler's amendment. Everywhere it's popular. People don't want to pay for this stuff. Right. We feel sorry. We pity these poor people who are so gender confused that they actually want to harm their own body. You know, they call them surgeries, but surgery is a word which suggests helping people. These aren't surgeries. These are body mutilations that are being done in the name of gender confusion, which has been renamed transgender, which means across gender. It's one of those artificial terms. You know, Bruce Jenner will never be a female no matter what he does. Bruce Jenner will always be a male. And so we've got to stand up and we've got to rally behind these Republicans, call your congressman, say how much you support this, and urge Trump to get back to the basics and to boot this whole transgender experiment in the military. I mean, we have the Pentagon celebrating LGBT Pride Month under Trump. Yeah. Under Trump, we had U.S. embassies in some nations still following the Obama thing of flying the rainbow flag on these gay activist days. That should end under Trump. Come on.
I agree with you there. And it was interesting at your website, there was also a story about this Dutch psychologist who has more than 50 years experience treating homosexual individuals. And this is what the story says. He is condemned now a Canadian plan in Ontario to offer genital transitional surgeries, you know, this kind of surgery. And he's talking about how bad it is, how terrible it is. We've had Dr. Paul McHugh from Johns Hopkins, where he was the head of psychiatry. And he put a stop to these because he said it isn't helping them. It's not making them feel better. Walt Heyer is one of the people who's gone through the surgery and reversed it because he said it didn't help. Why in the world are these voices being marginalized when there really ought to be a free and open debate about whether or not this is a wise course of action? Why aren't the Republicans at least demanding, let's have a discussion about it and hear from both sides?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you why. It's because they are afraid of the media. And one thing, the number one lesson we should learn from Trump is forget the media. The media has been part of the homosexual, radical, transgender movement for decades now. They are sold out. They're part of the LGBT lobby. You've got to talk past the media, get to the average Joe. Do you really think the average American is invested in facilitating severe gender confusion for our soldiers?
No.
Is that
going to
make America safer?
No.
And that's why Walt Heyer says, just ditch the whole transgender experiment. That's what he told me.
Right, right. But that's their push, and everybody feels intimidated. They have successfully made a whole lot of people, including a whole lot of powerful people, feel absolutely intimidated in quiet, you know, in the quiet of their own homes. They might say, this is ridiculous, but I can't politically afford to stand up against it because I won't get reelected. That's what backbone, huh, Peter?
Right, and I think Republicans especially, and there are some pro-life Democrats who, like Daniel, I think Lipinski in Chicago, not sure his first name, but he voted
Dan.
For this. He bills himself as a pro-life Democrat. It's not just the Republican fault, but the Republicans are in charge. They could have passed this so easily. They should go back. They should get it done.
Absolutely. Peter, thanks a lot for being with us, and thank you, too, for joining us here on Janet Mefford Today. We'll see you next time. God bless. JanetMefford.com, our website. We'll see you there.